Welcome back to the FPL Draft Hub podcast, looking back on game week 6 and ahead to game week 7. Hello, Draft Fantasy Football managers, and welcome back to the FPL Draft Hub podcast, the only podcast dedicated to Draft Fantasy Football on the official Premier League site. Lots to talk about this week as we go through all of the games from game week 6, look ahead at some picks for game week 7, go through some different trade options, as always, have a look at the bookies odds, and at the end pick our regular feature picks. So let's get into it. First game of game week 6 was Friday night football as Southampton hosted Bournemouth, Bournemouth coming out 3-1 on top. Poor performance from Southampton against a fairly average Bournemouth side who were not made to work particularly hard for their win. Poor defending from a Rico corner early on, allowing Aki to cut through some sort of mixed zonal man-marking hybrid mess to easily nod in past Gunn. Southampton were let off the hook shortly after as Solanke found some space and fed Josh King to slot home, only to see his effort chalked off by VAR due to a couple of studs being offside. 10 minutes later, Bournemouth were able to work the ball down some space on Southampton's right, and Billing pulled back a good cross for Harry Wilson to slot in confidently. At half-time, Southampton brought off struggling Danso, moved Cedric over to the right, and Bertrand came on to fill in at left-back, which made them look a lot better. Southampton got their goal as Che Adams was brought down in the box. Looked a clumsy challenge, but on replays, he's clearly bought it. He sees Cook coming, knocks the ball past very heavily. He was never really going to collect the ball. Jumps into him and wins the pen, which Ward-Prowse ultimately puts away. Shortly after that, Josh King was clearly fouled in the box at the other end by Cedric, but VAR, as we've come to expect, sat back and didn't turn the decision over. Callum Wilson then got the easiest goal he'll score this season after a mix-up between Angus Gunn and Bednarak allowed him to essentially walk the ball in. Southampton looked poor generally and very shaky at the back, especially in wider areas, but that did improve after half-time with the introduction of Bertrand. Bouffal continued to impress, though didn't manage a return in this game, and Redmond saw plenty of the ball, but never really looked like scoring. Che Adams got his first fantasy football return by winning the penalty. He was our mercenary pick from last week, but otherwise barely touched the ball as Southampton struggled to create chances. Bournemouth were full value for the win, but certainly didn't get into fifth gear. The two Wilsons continued to impress. Harry Wilson getting his third of the season, now averaging nearly 6 points per game, and Callum Wilson continuing his 100% record of returning in every game, bringing home 4 goals and 3 assists. Callum Wilson will certainly be taken in all your leagues, and it would take a big offer to pry him away from my team if I had him. Concern again for Fraser owners. Josh King looked good in the usual spot wide left, with Solanke alongside Wilson up top. Personally, I believe the team are more dangerous with Fraser wide and King and Wilson up top, but Bournemouth spent nearly $20 million on Solanke back in Jan and need to give him a chance to show his worth. The early game on Saturday then saw Leicester host Spurs, Leicester coming out 2-1 on top. Goals from Pereira and Maddison for Leicester and Kane scoring the goal for Spurs. Good game for the neutrals, started really lively, both teams wanting to attack, press and win the ball back high up on the pitch. Leicester had the first goal ruled out by VAR after Ndidi bundled one in. Spurs took the lead through a wonderful bit of interplay between Son and Kane, with Kane somehow able to slot in past Schmeichel despite being sideways on the floor. Spurs thought they'd double their lead through Aurier in the second half, but play was brought back for a VAR offside call on Heung-min Son in the build-up. A very tight one, but rules is rules. After that, Spurs tried to see the game out and invited Leicester on more and more, eventually culminating in an equaliser from Pereira and then ultimately a winner from Maddison, who generally had a very good game and edged the midfield battle with Harry Winks. For me, Leicester deserved the 3 points in the end. A minute after the Aurier goal was ruled out, Pochettino brought on Wanyama for Sissoko, who was walking the yellow card tightrope but had been dominating the midfield, and it completely deflated the team, who had just taken the knock of the second goal being ruled out anyway. We sat back, and the midfield went from being aggressive and proactive to one that was passive and reactive. I don't like the balance of the team playing the 4-4-2 diamond, as it only allows 3 out-and-out attacking options on the field, who are all generally very narrow. There should be a midfield two, meaning one of Sissoko or Winks has to miss out alongside Ndombele to allow four attacking players up top. The diamond system could work, but I feel it needs an Eriksen or a Dele Alli occupying one of those more forward midfield spots to better link back to front. Leicester play Newcastle and Liverpool before the international break and could see some joy there, while Tottenham have two, on paper, two easy games against Southampton and Brighton in which they'll hope to bounce back. On to the 3 o'clock kickoffs then, and the first was Burnley against Norwich, Burnley winning this game 2-0 thanks to a brace from Chris Wood. Pukki saw an early chance save well by Pope, but Norwich were quickly undone by a Burnley corner that Wood was able to head in at the near post. And less than 5 minutes later, McNeil was able to whip another cross in from the left that Wood was again able to tuck away for a second. The impressive front three for Norwich didn't have much to feed on in this game, who came up against a characteristic Burnley side that refused to concede. And it's clear from the opening six games that Norwich do not want to have possession in their own defensive third, and Burnley did an excellent job of squeezing the pitch and closing them down well high up. Norwich play Crystal Palace and Villa next, and can see them back amongst the goals, irrespective of what the results turn out to be, while Burnley play struggling Aston Villa and Everton before the international break, and could see some joy there. Next, another one of the 3 p.m. kickoffs on Saturday as Sheffield United travelled to Everton and got a surprising 2-0 victory away from home. A Mina's own goal followed by a Mousset goal completed the scoring. The own goal was from a corner, not much he could have done about it as the ball sailed past Pickford. Cracking second goal to seal the points as Lundstrom put a great through ball into Mousset, who stayed calm and slotted through Pickford's legs. Everton had plenty of the ball and created a lot of half chances which nobody had the composure to convert, but take nothing away from Sheffield United, who were really solid in their setup, and the opening goal just seemed to provide more mortar for the defensive wall Chris Wilder has erected. Everton have a couple of tough fixtures before the break with Man City and Burnley, and Sheffield United won't have any easy games this season, but none less so than Liverpool in the next game before they travel to struggling Watford. Next, Man City played Watford and romped home to an 8-0 victory, kind of scoreline where they need to put the number spelled out in words in brackets next to the number just so they can tell it's not a typo. Probably easier to list off the players that didn't feature in this game on the score sheet, but all the usual suspects were on there. David Silva, Aguero, Mahrez, Bernardo Silva got a hat trick. KDB absolutely ran the show again. Unbelievable performance from the champions. KDB showing why he's currently the best midfielder in the world. Pretty woeful from Watford. The Flores effect seems to be wearing off very quickly, though not the nicest game for him to have to lead. City used their subs to bring on some of their defensive options with Angelino, Cancelo and Garcia all getting a run out. These could be some of the only City players that still sat in your respective waiver piles, but other than Cancelo, don't look like viable options just yet. City's next fixtures are against Everton, Wolves, Palace, Villa and Southampton. Not that this should need saying, but just avoid fielding any defenders against City at the moment who look like they can score goals for fun against anyone. Watford have a couple of winnable games now against Wolves and Sheffield United before the international break and need to take at least 3 points away from those six available. Otherwise, more grease will pile up on the looming slope extending above them. The late game on Saturday saw Newcastle against Brighton. Don't think many people were expecting much from this game, and it certainly lived up to that expectation as it finished 0-0. Few players stood out. Mopay stood out again for Brighton, but had no real clear-cut chances. Best chances for Newcastle fell to Almiron in the first half, who could only hit his shot straight at Ryan. And then Joe Linton also failed to hit the target from a free header off of a corner. Brighton had one cleared off the line as a sub Connolly dinked one over Dubravka in the second half. But overall 0-0 was not a really an unfair result. Two young players stood out for Brighton. Aaron Connolly, who I just mentioned, who came on around the 70-minute mark. A centre-forward who had their best chance to score. And Stephen Alzati, who also impressed on the left-hand side. Moving on to Sunday, and Crystal Palace against Wolves finished 1-1. A Dendonker own goal and a late Jota equaliser. Wolves looked bright in the first half, managing to carve out some chances up front. But Palace were the ones to take the lead as Ward's wayward drive was deflected off of Dendonker and past Patricio. Zaha was a lot more involved from a Palace perspective and single-handedly got Sace sent off for Wolves with his quick interplay and dribbling giving him two yellow cards. Benteke and then Schlupp should have put Palace 2-0 up, but neither looked confident in front of goal. And ultimately, Wolves stole a point with the last kick of the game. Palace failed to see out the time at the other end as Zaha was dispossessed and Jota was able to stick in a deep Traore cross. Poor defending from Ward, who tried to head the ball clear despite it being at around knee height, just not as well versed in the salmon clearance as John Terry. The other game going on at the same time was West Ham against Man U. West Ham won that game 2-0 thanks to goals from Yarmolenko and Cresswell. Very poor by Man United, but take nothing away from West Ham, who were well organised. Yarmolenko was man of the match for me. Good finish for the first goal, but also had a great presence in the game in general, working hard in midfield and defensively. Added to our rising stars list the week before last, and repaying the big accolade that the FPL Draft Hub has bestowed upon him. Man United now on a really bad run of results, stretching back to last season. Still not sure where the consistent goals are going to come from. As mentioned before, Rashford doesn't look like the man to be the goal scorer for United. No new faces from a fantasy football perspective came out of the game. Matson Pereira likely to be free in your leagues, but I would not be tempted by them in the slightest. On to the 4 p.m. kickoffs on Sunday, and the first one was Arsenal against Aston Villa. Really entertaining game, which Arsenal ended up winning 3-2. Goals for Villa came from McGinn and Wesley, and the goals for the home side came from Pepe from the penalty spot, Callum Chambers and Aubameyang. Good opening goal for Villa, taking advantage of a flat-footed back four to cross in for McGinn to finish well. Arsenal suffered another blow before half-time as Maitland-Niles was sent off for two yellow cards, and it looked like Villa would continue to press their advantage. Arsenal came out firing in the second half, and again Guendouzi stood up and made something happen by dribbling into the box and winning a penalty off of a clumsy challenge by Engels. Pepe was given the penalty by Aubameyang and made no mistake smashing it down the middle. Villa had an opportunity to retake the lead almost immediately from McGinn, but less than a minute after that, Grealish picked up the ball from the clearance, drove into the box and squared for Wesley for Villa to go 2-1 up. Arsenal equalised again through some poor defending, Mings this time not clearing his lines and gifting the ball straight back to Callum Chambers, who was able to finish well. Aubameyang rounded off the comeback with a cracking free kick, leaving Heaton with no chance. Villa should have had a penalty late on for a Socrates handball, but as we should expect now, VAR is unlikely to award penalties in those situations if they've not been given on the pitch. Arsenal go to Old Trafford next week with a lot of confidence. Big game Monday night football. And if you listen carefully, you can already hear the sound of Gary Neville chiming, "It's just not good enough." Aston Villa play Burnley and Norwich next, with the game against their promoted rivals already taking on significance early on in the season. The final game of the weekend was Chelsea against Liverpool. Liverpool seeing out a 2-1 victory away from home. Trent Alexander-Arnold started the scoring with a stunning free kick to put Liverpool 1-0 up, with Mo Salah picking up the easiest assist points you're likely to see. Tammy Abraham should have equalised for Chelsea soon after and had plenty of time to pick his spot, but could only hit his shot straight at Adrian. Just 2 minutes later, Liverpool doubled their lead as Robertson crossed the ball from a free kick for Firmino to nod in from a few yards out. Kante channeled his inner Eden Hazard in the second half, slaloming into the edge of the penalty area before curling the ball into the top corner. Chelsea had a couple of good opportunities to level the game late on, with Batshuayi and then Mount going close, but Liverpool were able to see it out in the end. This game didn't bring out any new fantasy football options from a Liverpool point of view. For Chelsea, Tomori looks to be in the top three of the Chelsea centre-back pecking order, and with Rudiger and now Christensen on the sidelines, looks like a safe player to pick up from the waiver pile and take advantage of Chelsea's kind run of fixtures moving forward, playing the likes of Brighton, Southampton, Newcastle, Burnley, Watford and Palace. Let's look ahead to game week 7 then. Standout game on paper looks to be the Monday night game, Man United against Arsenal. Be interested to see how Man United do in that game. Some of the other games that stand out, Liverpool away to Sheffield United, Be interested to see how Sheffield United's defence can hold out against Liverpool's forward line. Aston Villa against Burnley. A lot of pressure on Aston Villa to start getting some results. The same with Crystal Palace at home to Norwich. And the same with Wolves at home to Watford. So hard to really see how those games are going to go. Pretty even on paper, but a lot of pressure starting to pile up on those teams. Spurs have got a nice home game against Southampton. Looking to bounce back against the poor collapse against Leicester. Chelsea play Brighton, which I can see being quite a nice game for the Chelsea forward players, as Brighton will play quite open. And Leicester also host Newcastle, which again can see Leicester winning that game. On to some of the waiver targets then. As usual, I'm going to break it down by position. Starting with the goalkeepers, I've picked a couple out. The first one is Fabianski for West Ham. He'd be my number one goalkeeper to pick up if he's available. Three clean sheets in a row. Great run of fixtures for West Ham now against Bournemouth, Palace, Everton, Sheffield, Newcastle and Burnley. And the whole team generally looks organised. Even if they do concede, Fabianski has picked up a save point in five out of the six games so far this season. So looks to bring home points regardless of how West Ham do. The second goalkeeper I've highlighted is Leno for Arsenal. He'd be my second pick if he's available. Would have thought he's less likely to be available, but although Arsenal are still looking poor defensively, Leno leads the way in save points, picking up 2 points in each of his last three games, giving him 7 in total, which is tied first with Lloris. Fixtures against Man U, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, Palace and Wolves, which are plenty of teams struggling to score goals. So if Arsenal are going to turn around their defensive frailties, it'll be in that run that they're able to do it. Moving on to the defenders then, as I've said last week, I would continue sticking with the Burnley defence. Norwich were the first team in the nice run of fixtures that they've got, and they managed to see that game out with the first clean sheet. The other team are West Ham, who, as I just mentioned with Fabianski, have a good run of fixtures. Diop is available in our 10-man league, for example, and in the last three games, he scored 6, 6 and 8 points. Spurs also have a nice run of fixtures with Southampton, Brighton and Watford their next three games. Lloris will be back in goal after his missus gave birth, causing him to miss the last game. Aria may still be floating around some waiver piles and had a decent game against Leicester, so still worth picking up. Owners of Davinson Sanchez may want to consider moving him on. Think during this slightly shaky patch, Pochettino is likely to stick with Alderweireld and Vertonghen at the back. May not be someone you're able to get much trade value from and could just be someone you have to drop into the waiver pile. Otamendi's another defender I wanted to highlight, just in case he's free in some of the smaller leagues. Nailed on Manchester City defender, comes with a goal threat. No brainer for me, Man City will keep at least one in two clean sheets and he'll rack up the points. In terms of defensive players to avoid, Lundstrom is the main trap I would avoid falling into. Currently leads the way for defenders with 32 points, putting him ahead of the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold. All of his points really have come from two games in which he's had attacking returns, plus the bonus points that have come with them. And with their next fixtures against Liverpool, Watford, Arsenal and West Ham, I can see Sheffield conceding a few goals and Lundstrom unable to get any of those attacking returns that have given him the points so far. And the same goes for all of the other Sheffield United defenders, who will be sitting fairly high up on the points tally so far, but I can't see them getting many over the next month or so. The other defensive players to avoid are the Southampton defenders in general. They've got a horrible run coming up over the next 6 or 7 games, playing Spurs, Chelsea, Wolves, Leicester, Manchester City, Everton and Arsenal. Really horrible run. If they are able to pick up a couple of wins in that run, I think it will do them well for the season. But I would avoid their defenders in general for those weeks. Moving on to the midfielders then, and there are three that I've picked out for you to consider bringing in. The first is Eric Lamella, who's played in every game for Spurs so far this season. He's exuding calmness up front. He's healthy for once. He seems to get on well with Pochettino. There's no contract dispute hangover from the summer. He's doing the job asked of him. 2 goals and 2 assists already. Likely to be your only way into the Spurs attack, unless you're in some of the smaller leagues where maybe Dele Alli's been dropped, but definitely one I consider picking up with their good run of fixtures. Next is Willian for Chelsea. Played okay against Liverpool. Barkley and Pulisic haven't really done anything to nail down a spot in the team. And Lampard may feel that Willian brings some experience to that team that's, you know, otherwise fairly young. Picked up 3 goals and 7 assists last season, and I'd expect a similar-ish amount this year, though most of that I expect will come from the bench. The only issue with him is that Hudson-Odoi is a looming presence as he returns to fitness, but I wouldn't expect him to start in the league before the next international break, so could use Willian as a short-term punt. The third player to consider, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is Mark Noble for West Ham. Now, you won't catch me saying this ever again, but West Ham have a really nice run of fixtures coming up, and Noble seems to be playing closer to a number 10 role in Lanzini's absence. As always, he'll be on penalty duty when he's on the pitch. And, you know, if you are desperate, if your team's full of injuries and you need a fifth midfielder, he'd be one to maybe consider. I've also highlighted a couple of midfielders that I would encourage you to avoid. The first is Jack Grealish. Aston Villa look like they're struggling at the moment, and although Grealish is playing really well, I don't think his style really translates into fantasy football points. At least it won't do on a consistent basis. He's currently got 20 points from the 6 games he's played, picking up 2 assists in that time. And I would see that that kind of form is likely his ceiling, and I'd expect him to continue those kind of numbers over the rest of the season. And the second player that I'd also encourage you to avoid is a very similar player, and that's Guendouzi for Arsenal. As I said, very similar in the middle, likes being the one to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. Tackler, passer, dribbler, you know, passes the eye test, but, you know, forms almost identical to Grealish, 19 points from 6 games, a game with 2 assists. I think it's likely that that kind of form will continue over the rest of the season. On to the forwards then, and I've picked out 4 that might be available in your leagues. The first one is Chris Wood, who's been the overlooked man so far this season. Lots of hype after Barnes' cracking start to the season, but Wood reminding everyone what he's about with 2 good finishes. Unlucky not to complete his hat-trick too. As mentioned for the defenders, a good run of fixtures coming up and could be your only way into that Burnley front line. Next is Josh King, who I'd imagine regardless of the size of your league is unlikely to be available, but one I might encourage you to trade for. Looked really good against Southampton, even, you know, playing on the left side. Decent fixtures coming up. He's on penalties, just 1 goal and 2 assists so far, so you'd have to say he's underperforming, and I'd expect that to rise very soon. The third forward is Jota for Wolves. Again, probably unlikely to be free, but somebody may have dropped him in your league after the run of 5 games and no returns. First goal at the weekend. Next game is at home to Watford and could be the start of a really good run. The final striker I'm going to highlight is Che Adams, who was last week's mercenary pick and managed to get his first return of the season, picking up an assist for winning the penalty. As mentioned for the defenders, Southampton have a tough run of games against some really good defences coming up. And, you know, any chances that Southampton are able to carve out in those games are likely to be from crosses and set pieces, where he doesn't have to think too much. There's less pressure on the team to get a result, and it could be the time that he finds he is able to open his Premier League account. Let's look at the trade market then ahead of game week 7. As I talked about last week, I'll go through a list of some players maybe to consider selling high if you have them, and then some players to consider maybe bringing in who are currently not in great form who you might be able to get a good deal on. So the first player to consider selling high is Riyad Mahrez for Manchester City. He's a player I have in my draft team. Currently sits 13 overall for his points tally. He's the 6th best midfielder with 35 points and he's only played 300 minutes. So he's averaging just over 10 points per 90 with 1 goal and 5 assists. People will be taking note of him, and with the cup competition starting to occupy the midweeks, you may have your eye on safer Premier League starters. Having said that, he will be a player that scores, you know, 15 points 1 week when he gets a start in a good game, and then 1 point the next as he comes on for 10 minutes at the end. So I would think very carefully before moving him out if you do have him, and, you know, remind you to think about the long stretch ahead. As I said, he is a player I have, and although it can be frustrating when he, you know, has a week where he doesn't start and he's not scoring points, I think for the, you know, looking at the season as a whole, he is someone that I'm looking to hold on to. The next player is McGinn at Villa. He's had a really good start to the year, looks real quality up top. I just don't see Aston Villa scoring that many goals this year. And he could be one where you use his good start to the season to move him on. Hard to say who you could target. Maybe someone like Eyose Perez for Leicester. You know, owners would be starting to get fed up with him, and it could be a sort of transition in form as McGinn fades out and Perez starts to find a bit. The other two players who I'm going to highlight next to consider selling high are not necessarily ones that you will be trading high, more that you'll be trading off the reputation that they've earned over weeks and seasons. So the first is Ryan Fraser. I would imagine that if you have him, there would be someone in the league willing to take him on based on previous season's form. Previously mentioned him when talking about the importance of patience, but the fact that he isn't starting games is worrying. And the player who he subbed on for tends to be Harry Wilson, who doesn't look like he's going to be dropped to the bench anytime soon. I do think he'll get games as, you know, Solanke continues to not deliver, which I think we'll see Josh King push further forwards, but it's not ideal if you have him. And the second player in that camp is Ceballos for Arsenal. So, you know, not necessarily trading him high, but could use the reputation that he's managed to gain after 1.5 good performances. We'll look to move him on to an Arsenal fan in the league who's wearing the same rose-tinted glasses that they used to see Jack Wilshere through. From what I've seen of him, I can see Ozil still getting plenty of Premier League minutes, and so Ceballos wouldn't be a player that I'd rely on long term. Some players to consider buying low then. On the list from last week, I've highlighted Bernardo Silva and Diogo Jota, more in the hope that you took my advice last week and were able to pry them off of somebody. Bernardo Silva obviously popping up with a hat-trick in the 8-0 win, and Jota scoring his first goal of the season, so I'm removing those from the list now as you won't really be able to buy them low anymore. But the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson, Deulofeu, Zaha and Milivojevic for Palace are all still on that list. They are still all players that I would consider bringing in, and if you were able to get a good deal for them, you know, due to a frustrated manager, maybe they've got, you know, a lot of injuries and they just need a player that's starting regularly, you could get a deal on some of those guys. Let's move on to some of the odds from the bookies then ahead of game week 7. As always, looking at clean sheets and anytime goal scorers. I won't go through all of them as we will be posting these on the pod notes on Twitter, so you'll be able to see the full list there. There are a few that stick out. Leicester are given a 54% probability of keeping out Newcastle. Chelsea 48% to keep out Brighton is quite high. And Wolves 42% to keep Watford out, I would say, is very high as well, considering there'll almost certainly be some Wolves defenders floating around your waiver pile. As always, the teams up against Manchester City and Liverpool aren't given great odds to keep them out. Sheffield United with just an 11% chance of a clean sheet, and Everton with just a 10% chance against City. Elsewhere, not many other clean sheets predicted by the bookies. Goals expected in Aston Villa against Burnley, Bournemouth against West Ham, Palace against Norwich, and Man U against Arsenal. In terms of anytime goal scorers, it's a fairly familiar list, but the player leading the way ahead of game week 7 is Harry Kane, with 60% probability of scoring. Below him is Aguero with 58%, and interestingly, Tammy Abraham is third with 55%. Mo Salah and Sterling are 54% and 52% respectively, Vardy on 51% and Mane on 50%. The rest are all familiar names. Pukki, Aubameyang, Firmino and Son all in the high 40s. As I said, the full list will be published on Twitter in the pod notes. On to our feature picks, and as we do for every game week, we've got the Nicholas Anelka Mercenary of the Week, which is your 1 week punt to try and bring in some quick points, and our Raheem Sterling Rising Stars, which are some players that we're looking at over a slightly longer period of time who we're expecting big things from. Last week's Mercenary of the Week was Che Adams, who got a return, picking up 5 points, which gives us a 2-3 record, so looking to level things up this week. And the player we are choosing is Daniel James for Man United. 3 goals in his first 6 games. At home to a poor Arsenal defence. Seems to have locked down a starting spot. Rashford potentially injured for the game. So if Man United are going to have a big game, I can see big things coming from Daniel James. Our rising star then for this week is Buendia for Norwich. Surprisingly, we've picked no Norwich players in the Rising Stars already this year, probably because they made such a good start. It seemed like too obvious a pick, but Buendia has looked really good so far and has a few games coming up against the likes of Palace, Villa and Bournemouth, where he'll get plenty of space to turn and do some damage. So expecting big things from him in the coming weeks. A reminder then that the waiver deadline for game week 7 is at 11:30 on Friday morning, that's Friday the 27th, and the final deadline for free agents is 24 hours later, 11:30 on Saturday morning, an hour ahead of the early kickoff, which is Sheffield United against Liverpool. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please give it a like and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to. Leave us a comment and a review. It's really helpful to get the podcast out there. The best place to stay up to date on what's happening with my team, get advice and check out the latest episodes when they come out, is to follow us on Twitter at FPL Draft Hub Pod. Probably the best way of getting in contact with us. Also quite active on Reddit. Quite an active draft community on the Draft EPL page. Always some chats going on there about potential trades and waiver options. If you have an active draft fantasy football league on the official site and you have discovered the podcast, please do share with the other teams in your league. I know it can be very tempting to hoard decent information. I've done it myself in the past, but really help get the pod out there. Best of luck for your waivers and trades ahead of game week 7. Really getting into the meat of the season now. As always, stay shook, and I'll be back in your ears next week.